A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete!
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Comedians at Law podcast. This week we have the best combo, in my opinion. It's Matt Ritter and Alex Barnett.
Hey, everybody.
You don't take issue with that, us being the number one seed.
You know, if someone's going to throw a bone my way or give me kudos, I'm not going to dispute it at all.
I do like that you use kudos. I say kudos, but I like your pronunciation.
Well, right. It's you say potato, I say potato kind of thing. But, you know, listen, like I said, if someone's going to praise me, I'm just going to say thank you very much and keep moving.
No, but can you say kudos one more time?
Kudos.
All right. I love that. So we're back. We have another great podcast this week for you. We've got a great interview coming up with a guy named Mark Luber, who runs a website called JD Careers out there. We had an interesting week in the blogosphere. First, we should do we have any shows coming up that we need to tell them about?
Well, we have some things coming up in the works. I mean, we have some private events that look like they're going to shape up. We've been getting a lot of traffic from people from bar associations and law schools about performing in the fall. So people should be looking at our calendar right after Labor Day to see what we got going on. And then, of course, each of us individually have our various club shows coming up. I've got a bunch of dates in September here in New York and Gotham. I know you've got stuff going on in L.A.
Yeah, I'm running a weekly show every Wednesday now at a bar called Casey's Irish Pub.
That's great. That's great. So I'm sure that's been full. And, you know, my shows at Gotham have been doing really well. So if people want to check out my website, they're free to. But for Comedians of Law shows, we did that nice show at Poconuts in the Poconos a couple weeks ago. And we're going to have a bunch of new dates in the fall. So they should check our website again, comedianslaw.com, right after Labor Day.
And we have a sketch that'll be up this week that's really, I think it'll really, you guys are really going to enjoy a commercial parody.
Oh, yeah. I was actually talking to our videographer who was putting the finishing touches on it, and I think and everyone, by the way, who's listening should know Matt Ritter, mastermind of the video. So all the kudos to Matt for that.
Any way to get the word kudos in, I'm happy with.
That's absolutely right.
So why don't we just jump into some stories?
Let's. We have a few really good ones this week, so I think let's get right into that.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine the news content?
Well, first off, we did a story, or I should say I did a story, about Bradley Chelsea Manning.
That's right. Well, just to give the background to people who may not have been following the news lately, let's tee it up for them. Bradley Manning, for people who don't know, was a U.S. soldier, a private in the military, sentenced to 35 years in military prison for breaching security by turning over sensitive documents to WikiLeaks. And there was a big trial, and he got a 35-year sentence. They thought they were going to be tried for treason and, in fact, maybe get life in prison or even a death penalty. But now it came out that, as Matt was alluding to, he wants to live the rest of his life as a woman. And Matt, take it from there.
So I proceeded to write a funny article about why that would be a good career move for a 35-year prison sentence. And I basically compared the lead character from Orange is the New Black, Chapman's first year in prison, to the lead character in Oz, Beecher's first year in prison. And it's drastically different, the things that happened to them in the first year. And so I jokingly made the case that I also would want to become a woman before heading to a 35-year prison sentence.
Well, you actually have, you know, very pretty features, so you might do well.
I've never given it that much thought, but I'm sure I'd be somebody's bitch in a men or a women's prison.
Well, so anyway, but let's be serious about this for one second. Have you ever been in prison, Matt?
No.
Okay. So at least at some level, your thoughts about this might be some conjecture.
Oh, a little bit, but I watch a lot of prison shows. but anyway, the reason that we are talking about this first is that Somebody took issue with my making light of transgendered issues and prison rape, and to which I replied, we are a first and foremost comedy endeavor. That's what we do. We poke fun at news and topical things. So I don't think this person probably even read the article, because I have, you know, transgendered friends, and I don't make light of their, you know, lesbian or gay or transgendered suffering. I was making light of the difference between your first year at a men and a woman's prison. That was the point. So I'm not sure this person read Norm Daguerre. I'm going to give you a little shout out, and not in a good way, Norm. you know, if you're going to come at a group of comedians, you should probably at least read the article.
Right, but let's give him his due. I mean, like, listen, we love fan engagement, so we're happy that Norm was reading our articles and engaging with us by making commentary. So on that side, we give kudos to Norm for engaging with us.
Yeah, but also it would have been nicer kudos if you said, hey, that's hilarious that you said that you compared their first nights in prison. To which I, in the article, if you read the article, I broke it down. First night in prison, Chapman got a sound night of sleep, whereas Beecher in Oz was raped by the entire Aryan Brotherhood and branded with a swastika on his ass cheek.
Right. Slightly different.
Slightly different experience.
That's right. That's
look,
right.
I mean, I do think, in all seriousness, I do think the government should pay for – I mean, I don't know. Does the government have to pay for it? That's the thing. I think he has a right to live out his life how he wants. It's just more of a question of whether the government should be subsidizing it.
Well, it's, what's interesting is, and in all, I mean, look, obviously people who are transgender, they deal with a lot of different issues in society, prejudice, discrimination, family issues, I'm sure. I mean, the host of issues they deal with is beyond description, and it's not really appropriate for this comedic podcast. On the other hand, it's interesting that Private Manning waited until being sentenced to all of a sudden decide, hey, you know what? I want to be a woman.
Well, which is why I wrote the article. I mean, obviously the timing lends itself to the joke. It's not a joke just in out of context about somebody wanting to do that. There's no humor there, you know?
Well, right. That's right. So, I think it does raise some red flags about how serious Manning is about this decision. Now, that's not to say he's not or she's not that this isn't all very legitimate, and that just because of the scrutiny and on the case, he or she didn't want to come out and say this right now. But it does sort of raise some eyebrows about, well, is this some sort of legal ploy?
Right. I mean, you know, it sounds like coming up with an alibi after you've already been, you know, caught red-handed, you know?
A little bit, yeah. So it is an interesting thing, and I think I haven't heard, other than your article, to be honest, I haven't really heard that being talked about in the blogosphere or newspaper articles or media, you know, online media. So it is interesting that people aren't talking about that specific issue more.
You mean the timing of it?
Yeah, the timing issue. Yeah.
I mean, look, I think a lot of people are afraid. You know, look, you don't want to sound insensitive, obviously, to somebody's struggle with gender identity. It's a serious issue, you know? But yeah, I mean, I generally think that it just, you know, if it smells, you know, funny. If the timing smells funny, it usually is, you know?
Right. That's, well, there's definitely a question, for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, so Norm, we do appreciate the back and forth, because, you know, it only made my position even more firm that I was right in writing a funny article comparing Oz and Orange is the New Black.
That's right. That's, at the end of the day, the most important thing is that Matt can walk away from this feeling like he was correct.
Yes, as always. So anyway, but I hope he gets, you know, if that's what he wants to live his life as a woman, I hope he gets that.
Right. And if he wants to get it paid for by the government, all I would suggest is that good luck getting it past the GOP and the sequester.
Yeah, it's going to be dicey. Although I heard the hormone pills only cost $200 a month, so it's kind of a small price to pay.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on, Matt, to the next news article we got, which is a pretty interesting one.
Yeah, you know, I felt that at the very least they could have given a shout out to my web series, The Bottom Rung, because this article basically sounds like it's ripped straight from the web series. It's an article on Above the Law about contract attorneys, the really horrible working conditions, you know, which I've pretty much laid out in hilarious detail in an entire season web series that won awards at festivals. But if you haven't seen my web series, then I guess you could read this article talking about how bad it is.
Yeah, well, and you can really speak to this because you have some experience with this scenario.
Yeah, I mean, this article talks about a project in D.C. saying that the bathroom always has a line, and the toilet, there's not a lot of toilet paper, and, you know, there's not a great kitchen situation, and, you know, it's crappy. It smells, it's crappy, the kitchen is substandard, it's in a basement, they said it's meant for storage, not for human beings, there's sewage, there's this and that. Everything that I basically have been through and wrote a hilarious web series about. But it is a serious problem. I mean, I only made light out of it because what else could I do? It's a horrendous situation because people feel they have no leverage.
Right. And obviously, listen, if you're going to treat people like crap like this, you have to outsource that and treat, you know, third world people, not Americans, like crap.
Yeah. No, right? It's you know, we're getting to that point. You know, look, people should have stopped going to law school at the same rate that they're going, you know, 10 years ago. They should have, you know, but everybody was a little late to the party. So I think we now have a generation, or at least, you know, 5-10 years worth of law school grads that have no choice but to do document review.
Right.
Which is, right, you know, a really crappy way to begin your legal career, because it's not really legal work.
No, and I mean, look, I didn't do that at the beginning of my career, but I can only imagine that it sets you back years in terms of your development. But what it does suggest, though, is interesting, which is, should law school be amended, the curriculum, to allow for people who are like, you know what, I don't really want to be a litigator or a corporate lawyer. I just want to review documents, so I should only have to go to law school for a year because all I need to do is learn how to read and, you know, click boxes.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because there are sort of tiers of document readers. At the very basic level, it is just that. But then, you know, when you get more detailed into it, they divide you up into teams of people with, you know, if you had a finance background, then you're actually bringing some skills to the table. You know, if you've been in a courtroom or you know pharmaceuticals and it's a pharmaceutical case, you know, you're bringing some things to the table and you actually have to do real thought. I mean, I jokingly say that it's just, you know, clicking documents, but on some levels it's a lot more than that. So it's kind of a weird, you know, hierarchy there too.
Right. We should get a document reviewer for comedians and law. I'm not really sure what they'd read, but I feel like it's something we should have on at our disposal.
You want to have a document reviewer? I just like to review our documents. I love that.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, like you could send them material.
Are we going to treat them inhumanely?
Yes.
I think so. I think we must.
Yes. Well, first starting with the salary, which would be zero.
Yeah, it would be zero. I mean, you know, it's really tough because, you know, what salary is right for somebody if you really are just clicking documents and you're, you know, sitting there as a temp? I don't know. Is it 20? Is it 30? Is it 50? Is it 60?
You know, it's interesting. I just had this conversation with a friend of mine this weekend. That very conversation, which is, you know, the relative worth of any given field, because, you know, here you have one document reviewer working, let's say, at $20 or $25 an hour for one project, and another who might be working at $60, $70, or $80 an hour for another. And at least on the surface, they're doing the same thing. Yeah. And how do you explain the difference in value? For example, when we go out at a show and we crush, why are we getting paid as much as, let's say, Louis C.K.?
We crush as hard as he does.
We're delivering the same product. Now, you could make arguments about he's better than us, or this guy's more experienced, or he has a huge fan base. And I think, you know, all right, but those are arguments on the margins.
I like where you're going with this, but by the same token, right? Why does one partner make $1,000 at one firm for the same exact drafting, same style, same whatever as some other firm that will charge you $300? You know,
right? So where this leads
it's
you?
It's what the market will bear.
It's where the market will bear. Now, I think they should have congressional hearings on document reviewers. And there should be like a minimum wage. Like you should not be able to pay.
I think that's right. And I think, you know, people are afraid to unionize.
Oh, that's another good idea. I like that.
Everybody's afraid because they think they have no leverage, right? But part of the leverage comes from like dignity and self-respect a little bit, right? It's like how much will you put up with if you keep putting up with, you know, worse and worse conditions? If everybody has this unspoken agreement to just let them walk all over you, you'll get nowhere.
Right. Well, I think what we ought to do is we ought to have contract lawyers out there tweet us at Comedians at Law, the at symbol of Comedians at Law, and let us know whether or not they think that unionizing is a good idea. Unionizing document reviewers, yeah. Contract lawyers.
I personally, this is just a vain, narcissistic thing that I would like to ask them which of the doc reviewers in my web series they identified with. if at all, because I had them all laid out, the Dreamers and the Gunners and the Lifers. I would like to know if any of you guys identify with the characters that I created in that world.
Okay, so if anyone does that and adds in the hashtag CalPod, CALPOD, and they mention one of the characters in Matt's series, not only will we give you a free T-shirt from Comedians of Law, we will give you kudos.
Kudos. We will give you. That doesn't. You're making it sound like it's a. It's some sort of chocolate like Twix. Is there a kudos bar?
There is a kudos bar. That is a chocolate Twix like bar.
There's also
you know words of praise.
Okay, so which one are we giving them?
We'll see how good their suggestions are.
I mean, now I feel like I don't want to sign up for trying to send them a box of chocolates that's no longer in the marketplace.
Right.
So we'll stick with the high praise.
The high praise indeed.
This kind of leads into the third story.
Yes. Let's do that.
So, you know, third year of law school. I don't know what third year was like for you, but for me it was like senior year of college. Because I had a job lined up, though, partially. It was a lot of slacking, not a lot of learning, no hands-on learning that would have helped me as a lawyer, which I definitely could have used.
Okay.
What about you?
And do you feel like that it should have been differently or different?
Absolutely. I mean, if you're going to have it. If you're going to have that third year, I absolutely think you – so anyway, there was an article about how, you know, there should be an apprenticeship versus this third year, which is just another – year of, you know, elective classes that do not serve you in law school.
Right. So you're pro apprenticeship.
Absolutely.
I know we're part of the podcast about where we disagree. I agree with you. I actually think that I would go one step further, though. I would say apprenticeship should begin after first year. In other words, it should be 1 year law school where you pack in all the required courses for the bar. And then year two is an apprenticeship. And then year three is you're set free into the world of law.
So you think there's only 2 years of law school?
Yes, because I'm not convinced, having been through 3 years, that anything beyond the middle of the second year was worth my time and energy. What would have been better is spend all of the second year doing an apprenticeship and having a slightly more intensive or longer first year, let's say.
And who chooses the apprenticeships? You get to choose what you want to do?
Well, that's a great question, because people always say, oh, we should have apprenticeships, but no one answers the practical question of, like, well, what do you do with the people in the bottom third of the class? I mean, which government agency or which law firm is going to give them an apprenticeship?
Right. Well, I mean, I think you have them working for, you know, the city doing, you know, whatever the least enticing apprenticeships are.
Right. I agree with that. I think I can speak to that with some level of experience, and I think that makes eminent sense.
Should they make money, or is it just free?
No, I look, I'm all about capitalism. I think they should make money. I think they should make why isn't it like medicine, right? Interns get paid.
Right. So who should get paid more? A second year intern at the city, you know, the prosecutor's office, or a document reviewer?
I think that it should be commensurate with your level of experience. So if you're a person who graduated from law school, has passed the bar, and for whatever reasons of your own, are reviewing documents, you should be paid more than a person who's still in law school, technically speaking, and is an apprentice.
Okay.
That's my personal feeling. Because you've earned that sort of feather already.
Who do you think should make more, paralegals or document reviewers?
I think that a good paralegal is worth like four lawyers.
Yeah.
So I think it depends. I mean, if it's an entry-level paralegal, you know, it's a question. But a really good paralegal, let me tell you, you've worked in a big firm, you know. A good paralegal is worth more than a lawyer.
Lifeline. They're your lifeline.
Well, they do the stuff that nobody wants to do, and they get it done, and they can organize you in a way that really makes the case.
They also know what a secretary certificate is. I still don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't help you with that.
It's like some sort of stamp that you get from each state when you're, like, incorporating. I don't know.
I mean, listen, anything that you could ever tell me about reducing the amount of time people spend in law school or reducing the cost, I'm in favor of, because I spent 3 years in law school wondering, what am I doing here? And why is it costing me this much money?
Yeah. I mean, it would definitely help with the cost, right? But wouldn't that make more people then start going to law school again if it was only 2 years? Is that what we want?
Well, it's a good question. I think no, because I think if you had to have a rigorous apprenticeship that you had to get certified that you completed successfully, that would still be a barrier to entry. In other words, people would say, well, I don't want to do a year of working for, you know, $18,000 a year or something. as an assistant DA.
Right. So you think that would call out the people who were sort of – you know who I think that would call out? And I think they've probably already been called, but the people who kind of went to law school on a whim?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. It's like I think people would probably do – a lot of people would go to law school for all the reasons they go now. I don't know what to do. I graduated from law school. My father's a lawyer, blah, blah. But then they'd finish their first year. They'd get into their apprenticeship. They'd start doing it. They'd be like, I hate this. I'm not doing this anymore. And they drop out.
Yeah, I think that's right. Hey, you have a kid.
Yeah.
What do you think? Would you ever let him go to law school?
Well, I think at that point, it's not really your choice. I think I will strongly encourage my son not to become a lawyer. I think that if he decides he wants to work as a white-collar worker like that, I will definitely push him in the direction of banking where you can make real money.
Right, but if he's going to do banking, wouldn't you just push him to do finance?
Yes, that's what I mean. You know, like hedge fund.
Right, non-law. You mean non-law.
Non-law. I want him to go make a lot of money, especially because if I'm still alive, I want to retire off of his dough.
What would you be willing to spend? Have you thought about this yet? What would you be willing to spend on your child's law school education if he wanted to go?
Zero.
Zero.
Unless he gets into the top five schools in the country, I would be like, listen, dude, you're on your own.
You're going to call him dude, huh?
I call everybody dude.
Yeah, yeah. Listen. You're just going to sit him down and go, listen, dude, you're on your own.
I'd be like, kudos to you for getting into law school, but you're on your own, dude.
A big kudos. A big kudos on getting into, what's the top five? Is Harvard to Harvard, Yale? All right, so if he got into UVA, that's like eight, right?
Yeah, he'd have to show me the plan that leads him to, financial wealth.
He's got to show you the finance. He's like your prudential advisor. He needs to show you his plan.
Right, like if he got into a bottom second
say,
tier.
Say he got into Fordham Law School.
Then I'd be like, you know what? You're on your own.
What if they gave him half the money? Would you come up with the other half?
Well, it depends because my son is two. So by the time he's in law school tuition could be like $4 million.
Yeah, what if it's $4 million to go to law? I mean, it's conceivable that could be the amount that it costs.
So it's like at that point I'd be like, listen, I love you. I want you to do well. If you want to be a lawyer, I'm right behind you. But I don't have $2 million to spare.
Yeah. you know what I heard? This is – kind of unrelated, but I heard that there's some countries where notaries are like a tightly held group, and it's not like, you can just go to CVS and ask their notary there. Like there's only like 1,000 notaries in some countries, and they make hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I like that. Well, I have to be honest. I love being an American. I'm very proud of being an American, but I look with envy on places like China where the government can just say, like, you know what? We're going to build a bridge with green technology starting tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, they just moved. They just relocated like 20 million people into a city they just built yesterday.
Right. So it's like if a place like China or Paraguay wants to have this tightly held group of notaries because that serves some sort of governmental interest, even if it's anti-democratic, if it's efficient, that's great.
It's probably more of a big scam for the royal families to have their kids get good cushy jobs.
Oh, that might be. In which case, that's bad. So,
Should we move on to our favorite little segment?
Yes, let's do that.
This is a segment we like to call Good Cop, Bad Cop. I think I'm already playing the bad cop officially.
I think by disposition, you are a trending bad cop.
I'm trending. I always trend a little bad. Yeah, you'd have to have a really bad cop for me to be the good cop.
Right. Like, I think you and Kevin – he has bad cop tendencies, but that's Kevin Israel from People Who Are Listening, one of the more muscular member of the community.
Yeah, if I had to rank the good to bad copiness, I think you and Matt Storrs are very heavily good copy.
Yes.
Joan leans good copy.
Although she has a dark side.
She has a dark side too. She's somewhere in the middle. Julie, I feel like, has a dark side too.
She has a very dark side, although she's not generally mean to other people.
We're just talking about, like, if you were going to be in a cop movie and they were like, all right, we want you to be the cop that is on the take.
She'd be the depressed cop.
Oh, she'd be the – I feel like I'd be the cop on the take.
Yes, I definitely think that's right. I think you're right. I think Kevin would be the one who would be not wanting to take the money but would. And I'd be the one looking at both of you saying, oh, guys, you're really letting me down.
Yeah, well, that guy gets killed for opening his mouth.
Right. All right. Well, let's get into good cop, bad cop here. So I'm looking at our Twitter feed. As always, we're very excited to have engagement from our fans. And as Matt mentioned at the top of the podcast, Norm DeGayer is an active tweeter, tweeting us with all kinds of information and criticisms. So that's great. We love to have Norm on board. Although, as Matt said, well, I'll let you speak for yourself, Matt. You are the bad cop.
Yeah, no, as I said, Norm, we appreciate your misguided criticisms.
Yes, well, but we do appreciate it. On the other hand, we can't offer the free T-shirt that we like to offer because he did not stick to our guidelines of using the hashtag CalPod. But we do want to encourage him to keep tweeting in.
He might win a T-shirt. I might send it one day.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he'll be looking forward. But I also want to mention, and the good cop here speaking, we have six other people who've just followed us, which is great.
That is a good week.
Yeah, The Rabbit Hole Show, Laugh Out Law, Kay Bloom, Cass Thomas, Gung Ayu L. Cynthia, and Richard Quezon. So that's great. That's 1 week of people just coming, jumping on the bandwagon here.
Yeah, Cass Thomas seems like a big shot. He was an ex-California... Wait, who is this guy? He seems like a big shot. It says Big Think Blogger. I don't know. He's got 200,000 followers.
Hey, you know, we'll take it. In fact, Cass, I'll tell you what. Tweet us. We'd love to talk to you about maybe being a guest on a future podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people listen to him when he speaks, when he tweets.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so again, the tweet for next week, the tweet challenge is to someone tweet us about Chelsea Manning, right?
Yeah. No, tweet it. Well, yeah, you can tweet us about that.
Tweet us about the
contract attorney. I want to know if any of you guys identify with any of the bottom-rung characters or, you know, just anything about horrible working conditions that you've experienced. And use the hashtag CALPod.
That's right. All right, Matt. Good talking to you.
All right, great. And coming up, we've got a great interview. Talk to you later, Alex.
All right, bye-bye.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Comedians of Law podcast. We have a great interview coming up for you. We have a very special guest. He is a former lawyer, and now he helps lawyers with their career decisions. He runs an incredible site called JD Careers Out There, and he is also the author of a book called 99 Things You Can Do with a Law Degree. Welcome to the podcast, Mark Luber.
Thank you, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I wanted to just jump right into the site. Tell us, what is the goal with this site?
The goal of the site is to help law students and lawyers figure out what to do with their law degree and to get them professional development advice to help them succeed. So we do everything by video. And basically, you know, I used to be a legal recruiter and so often found people who were miserable in their career paths and just had not learned in law school what the different things were that they could do with their law degree. And so we want to help people figure that out either before they hit that point or once they've hit that point, and both help them choose a path that fits them by learning about all the different things that are out there. We interview people who do the different jobs and they say on video, you get to watch them talk about what each path is really like, how to break in, how to succeed. And then all our guests also share professional development advice, you know, the soft skills, interviewing, networking, business development, all those things that help you in life, office etiquette, all those kinds of things that you don't learn in law school, but you really need once you're out of law school.
So you're basically saying you guys fill a ginormous gap that exists in the legal profession. I wish that was out there for our Comedians at Law group. That would have made things a lot easier for us to decide that we weren't cut out for the big firm legal practice.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely the goal. That is the goal.
Yeah. No, I think that's very cool. And you were already doing this for non-lawyers before. That's how you sort of made the jump to giving career advice to lawyers.
Well, yeah, basically first, you know, I was a legal recruiter first, and then I had a site called Careers Out There without the JD at the beginning. And yeah, we were doing the same kind of thing there with the video interviews with people on that site from a wide variety of professions, everything from teachers to engineers to doctors to people in the creative arts, and finally decided to focus on the law thing since that's what I knew and that's what I came from. And since I'd been a recruiter dealing with those issues every day, I decided to continue along that path and you know, focus on the law thing. So that's what brought me there.
How bad is it out there? I mean, how stressed are the people that come to you? I mean, just the sort of atmosphere, you know, mentally for the law students. And, you know, because I graduated and it was a pretty good time. And, you know, I don't really know how stressful it is for these guys out there right now.
It's really stressful out there. I mean, you know, the cost of school kept going up, but the jobs didn't. And so there's less jobs and there's more people that are stuck with loans and without jobs. And so it's a big problem. You know, the big law firms are hiring less people. That world's changing. And so less people are going into that world. And so some of the people that would have gone into that world are now taking jobs at firms that they would not have considered before. And so people from other schools who would have gone to those jobs are now being pushed into a situation where they're saying, okay, well, you know, if the people from the fancy schools are taking my job, where am I supposed to go?
You got to go to McDonald's.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what's going on. So it's tough out there. And, you know, law school doesn't teach all those other things of what you can do and how to use your degree and where you can go with this skill set and background. And so people feel stuck. And I would argue, though, that even in a good economy, and I'm sure, you know, we could talk about this, when you were coming out, even when times are good, and you're going to the big law firm, you left and a lot of people leave. And even then you hit that stressful, like, oh, my God, this isn't for me. What do I do? I'm stuck. I don't even know where else I can turn. And, you know, so it's a common situation, really, regardless of the school, regardless of the background, regardless of the economy. I think the economy is just aggravating the situation.
No, I think that, I mean, I think you're hitting, you know, both prongs, right? I mean, you're definitely hitting the people that, you know, are sort of faced with the harsh realities of the new legal landscape, right? And then the people that want to get out. What are you seeing more of? I mean, what are more people coming to you for? I mean, is it a mix? Is it like, are most people really, you know, want to stay in the law, but they can't find the right spot for them? Or is it most people, I got to get out of the law?
I'd say it's a total mix. I think it's going to, that might shift a little. I mean, a lot of the focus with the site has been on the schools. So we haven't focused as much yet on getting the word out to the people who are unhappy, to the community I was dealing with a lot of the times as a recruiter. Basically, I've been doing a lot of outreach to law schools and getting schools and students to know that we exist. So moving on to the other world is what we're going to be doing as well. So even though we have had a mix, I think that the mix might shift more to those people who really do want to, you know, pursue new things.
What I wanted to hit on that, because, you know, you've got a book, 99 Things You Can Do, with the JD, but without giving away too many of the secrets, they got to go buy the book. What are some professions that people are jumping into that we wouldn't expect? I mean, obviously we're comedians, so we know that's sort of out there, but what are some other ones?
Yeah, other than comedy, you know, working in the insurance industry, you know, I interviewed a guy who's a high-end insurance broker. He works at a major global insurer, and he does mega deals for environmental risks. So you're a company, you're building a big factory or some big kind of, you know, you're building a Staples Center, whatever it might be, you want to get coverage for whatever environmental disaster. Maybe it's, you know, you're not sure. Maybe there was a nuclear site there a couple of years ago and you don't want everyone to, you know, turn green while they're working for you. So, you know, so he does these big contract negotiations and he's not working as a lawyer, but he's working as an insurance broker.
It's funny you should say that. That's exactly what my brother left the law to do.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go. Yeah. And there's a lot of people on all ends of the insurance business that have law degrees. It's a lot of people. And it's one of those fields where they respect a law degree. And it's not like they're going to put necessarily in their job descriptions, hey, lawyers, come to us. But, you know, it's one of those things where you can sell them on why you're a good fit. There's another guy I interviewed. I thought this was really interesting. He does community development work. So he works at a major bank. And he was running a department where almost his entire team was lawyers, even though they weren't practicing law. And what they do is they work with real estate developers who are investing in deals for things like affordable housing, renewable energy, rehabbing historic buildings. And in exchange for the loan that the bank is making to them, the bank is getting these tremendous tax credits because they're helping the community. And this is all like public policy written into the tax code. And so it's teams of lawyers around the country who work on this kind of stuff. So, you know, that's something I didn't know existed.
That's interesting. That's definitely another one. What do you, I mean, what would you say is sort of kind of a big mistake that you see grads making? I mean, if I want, you know, I wanted to have you on so that maybe we could help, you know, some law students and grads. Like, what are you seeing as a common mistake?
I think the common mistake is people who don't think outside the box. You know, too often focusing on what's prestigious or what you think you're supposed to do with your path without ever really stopping to listen to your own head or your own heart. And that happens so often. And as a recruiter, I talk to these people all the time, and it killed me. You know, I check in and, you know, at places like where you used to work and say, hey, how's it going? How are things with you? And are you interested in hearing about other opportunities? And they would just be – a lot of these people would just be freaking out because they were just on paths that didn't fit them. Because, you know, lawyer types chased A's in school and are used to going, you know, moving forward towards whatever that big goal is or is supposed to be, whether it's the A in school, the most prestigious this or that, the best this or that. And, you know, you end up chasing what's best without stopping to see what's best for you. You're thinking about what's best with quotes around it, you know? And then
I think that's, I think you're totally hitting the nail on the head. I mean, I think I was guilty of that at some point in my career.
Yeah, it's so many people are. It's just this. It's something about being that type A personality and the type of person that did well in school, and you know, you chase the. And then you're in law school, and you hear just kind of the vibe at the school is always, you know, you got to get the best grades, so you could get the best summer associate jobs, so you could get the best this, and you know, it's like dangling candy in front of a baby, or you know, carrot in front of Bugs Bunny. It's just you get all excited about it and chase it, even, you know, just out of instinct, without stopping to say, wait, do I even want to chase that? Do I even know what it is?
Right. But I guess, you know, I guess the problem is, right, so how do you answer the money issue, right? I mean,
well, that's a big problem, the money issue, because people, one of the big things that I saw is the golden handcuffs issue. You know, a lot of people, and they probably should have financial management classes in law school. Some would argue doctors need it more than lawyers, but lawyers need it too. You know, I saw it all the time where I would call someone to see if they wanted to hear about an opportunity, and they'd say they wanted to leave law, but they couldn't. And why couldn't they? Well, they just bought the new BMW and they just bought the new fancy condo on the ocean and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden they have, in addition to school debt, they have all this personal debt, and all of a sudden they can't take the freedom to do other things. There is someone that I interviewed, and she had actually been an associate who I moved from a big firm to a smaller firm. And she talked about how she made a deal with herself that after her first year, she would sock away every additional penny she was paid beyond her first year salary and not let herself touch it no matter what. So she said, you know, she had to continue just making – pretending that she's living off her first year
salary. That takes incredible discipline. I don't believe that.
Yeah, it worked. I mean, it allowed her to buy a nice place and leave the law all at the same time. And it worked out great for her, you know, and she was really proud of doing that. And I thought it was smart. People got to have that discipline. You got to learn how to do that. I mean, I'm sure you had to learn a new way of keeping track of your money and your spending, right?
I had to enjoy living in squalor for a few years, actually.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But, just kind of got to shift, you know? I mean, you don't have to go all the way to, like, eating ramen noodles, unless things are really dark. But, you know, it can't hurt to develop a taste for those.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree. Look, for me and the other guys in our group, it was a lot about downshifting your lifestyle and – you know, once you get through that transition period, it's not that bad.
Right, exactly. It's not that bad. And you got to get over – people have to get over the thing of, well, what's everyone else going to think? You know, this isn't as prestigious. Everyone looks at how fancy my job is, and all of a sudden they're not going to think I'm as fancy anymore. And then you have to start thinking, well, if I'm suffering every day at work, does it matter that everyone's going to think, wow, what's he doing or what's she doing? All of a sudden, you know, downgrading the lifestyle. Wow. It's like, yeah, a lot of people downgrade their lifestyle and suddenly they're the happiest they've ever been.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm – my five-year law school reunion, I was kind of dreading that because I was doing comedy. And things came full circle. They paid me to come perform there and everybody thought I was, you know, like, holy crap, this is so much cooler than what we're doing.
Exactly. That's the thing. People end up – you know, people end up coming around. It's just the – you just got to get over that first hump of in your own head, really.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit because I read on your bio. I wanted to switch gears. You toured with the Rolling Stones.
my first job after law school, my first paying job after law school. It was pretty exciting. So right after passing the bar in Illinois, I moved to California. And the reason I went to law school in the first place was to be in the music business. And I had been told that it was the best background to have for the music business because there's so many contracts in the industry, blah, blah, blah. So I bought that one. And I went to school and then moved out to California. And there was a place that I really wanted to work called Bill Graham Presents. Bill Graham was my hero. I'd seen him on MTV at the famous Live Aid concerts when I was a kid, and I wanted to be Bill. I wrote Bill a letter when I started college. I said, Bill, I want to be you one day, and what should I do? And his assistant wrote me back, and it was the most exciting day of my life. And the letter said, go to law school or business school. And so it was another time I was hearing that advice. I stayed in touch, and unfortunately, by the time I was done with law school, Bill was no longer alive, and I still wanted to work at his company. So went out to California as soon as I passed the bar, and first I called the company, said I'd like to work there. They said, we don't have anything available. Packed up my car, drove to San Francisco, and said, hey, I'm here. Now do you have something available? And they said, well, you know, we can use an intern. And I said, yeah, what's that going to lead to? They're like, you never know. I'm like, okay, I'll take the chance. So it was a 3-month internship. And so here I was, a lawyer, doing work that I could have done in seventh grade. And not getting paid, you know, a dime, but it was just for 3 months. And then on the last day, I was offered a job with the Rolling Stones. There was a woman known as the Ticket Queen who, for anyone that was just at the Outside Lands Festival, Paul McCartney talked about her on stage. So that was kind of cool. I just saw a video of that. She and I hit it off.
Who is the Ticket Queen? I don't know.
That's her name, the Ticket Queen. Yeah. And her job is she built her own thing, first working at Bill Graham's company and then on her own, and built a company to basically run the VIP ticketing for major acts. And she first did it for Bruce Springsteen on the Born in the USA tour and just kind of blossomed into this whole career path. And basically was doing the Stones tour, needed someone to work with her, and liked me, met me through the internship. I hit it off with her and became friends, and that was it. Next thing I know, I'm on a plane to Chicago for the Soldier Field shows, staying at either the Four Seasons or the Ritz-Carlton, taking, you know, as part of the entourage of the band with, you know, the special all-access laminate kind of thing around my neck, like in Wayne's World. And there I was, like, in a van with tinted windows with police escort, going from the fancy hotel to the backstage of Soldier Field and having dinner with the band. And I'm crapping my pants. I mean, I'm 25 years old. My friends are doing, you know, their first year associate jobs. And there I was, like, with one of my favorite bands of all time. And I still can't believe it all happened, you know?
Yeah, it's very Almost Famous.
Yeah, when that movie came out, I got a million phone calls.
They were like, is that
it really
you?
Was.
Is that you?
It was really crazy. There was one of my favorite times, Lisa Fisher, who's the background singer who sings Gimme Shelter with Mick, and you know, she's in a movie right now about background singers that's a documentary that's doing pretty well.
Wow.
And she was sitting in my lap in this van. She's on one leg because since I was an extra body in the van, everyone was crushed in there, and everyone but the four major guys from the band are in this van. And so she's on one leg, and then Chuck Lavelle, the keyboard player, is right next to me. And I'm also an Allman Brothers fan. And I'm asking him, I'm also a keyboard player, and I'm asking him if he would show me one of the keyboard parts to the song Jessica. And so on my right leg, he's playing Allman Brothers keyboard parts. And on my left leg, I've got Lisa Fisher. And I'm just sitting there thinking, this is too crazy to be true. It was fun.
Wow.
It was fun.
I mean, it sounds like that could happen if you quit your law, you know, if you guys are listening out there, you got to quit your law job and then you could end up on a tour with Jay-Z and Justin Timberlake on your lap.
Jay-Z and JT, you never know. You never know. But it's a crazy world, that touring world. I mean, it's like a corporation that's in a bubble and just kind of floats from city to city and doesn't really change from city to city.
Yeah, people always ask us about our tours. I would say it's just like that. Just like,
yeah.
Just exactly like you just described. So before I let you go, I wanted to you emailed me. You said you're a Breaking Bad fan, huh?
Oh, huge fan of that show. Love that show.
Yeah. What do you think is going to happen?
Wow, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'm trying to decide, is Jesse going to flip or not flip? Because I feel like if he flips this week, there's 6 episodes left. There's a lot of ground to cover. So it seems like if he flips, it shouldn't take that long for the whole thing to wrap up. So I'm not really sure if he's going to flip yet, but I kind of think the ricin's going to be used by Walt on himself.
That's an interesting one. That's a very, very interesting theory. We'll see how it plays out. Hopefully we didn't ruin Breaking Bad for people who are like, you know, haven't even started it yet. But if you haven't started it yet, it's too late. So before we let you go, you know, so let's give you a chance to promote all of your ventures here. I cede you the floor to tell all of the law students and lawyers where to find information and how you can help them best.
Thanks a lot. So yeah, JD Careers out there, you could find at, we have a little shortcut since it's such a long URL, jdcot.com. And yeah, there's a lot of free content at the site, and then there's also membership content. Basically, we do the career path exploration videos where we interview people in and out of law in a wide variety of careers. And then we have the professional development stuff, which is advice from all these different voices who are all from around the country, male, female, of all colors. And they're all talking about everything from, you know, how you should interview well, to network well, to office etiquette, to everything you really want to know to be a superstar professional. And that's what we do there. I also have I'm available for one-on-one counseling sessions, and we have Myers-Briggs testing available on the site, which I'm a big fan of for you guys to really get a good look in the mirror, which is what will help you hopefully avoid making some bad decisions down the road.
I already know that I'm a sociopath, so I don't really need that confirmation. But yeah, guys, really check it out. I mean, he's here to help. And, you know, don't let your legal career just pass you by without doing what you want to do. Thank you, Mark Luber, for doing the podcast. And, good luck with everything.
Thanks so much, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.